This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Now a hair growth product with natural ingredients and fast results. Reveal from GCNLife.com.
Black holes, the cosmos, space and time travel, science and technology, brought to you by theoretical physicist, futurist, popularizer of science, and world-renowned author, Professor Michio Kaku,
and GCNLive.com.
This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. On Science Fantastic, every week we profile some of the most amazing developments in science which are going to touch our lives and shape our destiny. And with us once again is astronomer Chris Empey, professor of astronomy at the University of Arizona in Tucson. And we're going to talk about the recent space shuttle mission. You know, some people criticize NASA for being the agency to nowhere. I mean, it does send unmanned robotic probes to the outer reaches of the solar system, but humans are simply stuck on the planet Earth spinning wheels. Well, some people say that we now have new wind in the sails with this recent space shuttle launch. I should also point out that Professor Empey is the author of several great books that I highly recommend. One of them is called Beyond, Our Future in Space. And the recent book is called Einstein's Monsters, The Life and Times of Black Holes. And if you want to find out more about Science Fantastic, go to my website. It's mkaku.org, mkaku.org. There's a complete list of all 100 or so radio stations that carry Science Fantastic. And it also mentions my 4 New York Times bestsellers. My latest bestseller is called The Future of Humanity, talking about terraforming Mars. One day will we have interstellar travel, and what's beyond? And so that book is called The Future of Humanity. But today we're going to start off talking about the recent space shuttle launch and what lies next for NASA. So, Chris, glad you could be on Science Fantastic once again.
It's good to be back with you.
Okay, well, let's just jump right into your history. How did you, as a young kid, first get interested in science, and then what steered you in the direction of astronomy?
Yeah, I actually got a late interest in astronomy, not really till I was in college. So I grew up in Britain, and as you probably know, Britain doesn't have a lot of good dark, starry skies, cloudy place. So I didn't really experience the sky when I was growing up. And physics is sort of the gateway drug to astronomy. So I was an undergrad doing physics, and I thought it was amazing that you could apply these small set of laws of physics to the entire universe. And that was sort of what got me hooked.
Okay, well, let's talk about the recent space shuttle launch. Some people are saying that perhaps it's a new chapter in space exploration. A new era is dawning. So what are your thoughts? What is the significance of the recent space shuttle launch?
Sure, and people get hyperbolic about these things, but I think in this case it's true. It is a game changer. First of all, NASA is partnering with the private sector for the first time, and has given over large parts of its launch capability to SpaceX, run by Elon Musk. Second, he has a very aggressive development program for rockets, and he's basically making the price of one of his launches 10 times cheaper than the space shuttle, which preceded it, and as we know, two of those were lost, unfortunately, with lives lost, and it was grounded. You know, American astronauts have been grounded for almost a decade until this launch.
And I understand that, talking about cost, that the booster rockets are reusable. And that, of course, is a potential game changer, reducing the cost of space travel, because every time you use a booster rocket, you throw it in the ocean. So isn't that going to change the cost and the economics of space travel with reusable rockets?
Oh, yes, it definitely is. And people who watched the video, you know, may have seen the launch. They might have seen the docking at the space station the next day. But the third piece of video that's really impressive was 9 minutes after the launch when this main booster rocket landed on a dime, literally on an offshore platform. And, yes, that makes the launch cost really dramatically cheaper.
And I understand, as you mentioned, that we had two space shuttle disasters, each one claiming the lives of 7 brave astronauts. But this Falcon 9 has the capability of an escape capsule. So isn't that also a game changer in the sense that astronauts can push the panic button and go back to the planet Earth if the rocket misfires?
Yes, it is indeed. I mean, the Apollo rocket, the Saturn V rocket, had an escape capsule that luckily never had to be used. But, you know, it's a dangerous thing going into orbit. And the Dragon X capsule can actually hold 7 astronauts. It didn't have 7 this time, but yes, they will have a way to get out. And that's been tested, too, obviously not with live astronauts. But SpaceX seems to have passed all their technical hurdles.
Now, to put a pound of anything into near-Earth orbit, just cargo, costs roughly $10,000 a pound, which is roughly the price of gold. So imagine your body made out of solid gold. That's what it costs to send you up and out of space. But what you're saying is that a new era is dawning with private enterprise, with reusable rockets, with competition. And you say that it could go down by a factor of 10? I mean, that could open up the heavens for mom and dad, right?
That's right. So SpaceX and the competition between SpaceX and Blue Origins, run by Jeff Bezos, that's been an interesting sidebar on this whole private space race between two companies. That's driven down the cost per pound to the number you said in the last decade. And Elon Musk thinks he can drive it down another order of magnitude. And yeah, at that point, holidays in space are on the table. I mean, they're not going to be cheap, you know, but a fancy cruise might cost you $15,000 or $20,000. So they'll be the holiday of a lifetime.
And I understand that Elon Musk has a vision that he wants to establish humanity with as a multi-planet species, while NASA had a mission, a vision, and that was to beat the Russians. But once we beat the Russians, there was no more long-term mission. So can you elaborate a little bit more? What does it mean to be a multi-planet species?
Well, I think Elon Musk, along with other people looking at the situation of the Earth, recognize that, you know, it's not clear. Our long-term survival is not entirely guaranteed or clear. And Elon Musk has famously said he'd like to die on Mars. That's a kind of gloomy statement. But what he means by that is, even though we've just seen this milestone of his rocket putting Americans into space for the first time in almost a decade, he's taking the long view. He wants colonies on the moon and Mars. He would be part of such a colony on Mars if he was able to. And he thinks that eventually we'll spread beyond the Earth.
And I understand that Jeff Bezos also has a vision, the vision of the Earth as a celestial garden with heavy polluting industry sent into outer space and millions of people working in outer space. So could you elaborate on that vision for outer space exploration?
Yes. I mean, we're clearly sullying the planet with our industry and our pollution and carbon dioxide and so on. And some of those industries can be taken off Earth. I mean, asteroids have, you know, a modest-sized near-Earth asteroid has several $1 trillion worth of precious metals and rare earths, and so maybe some of the mining can be taken off Earth. So this idea of taking our dirty industries into orbit, and also along the way sort of fueling the exploration of the solar system, the colonization of the moon and Mars and other places, I mean, it's a very grand vision, and Jeff Bezos obviously, you know, given his history with Amazon, has had big visions in the past, and there's no reason not to take him seriously now.
And there's yet another great vision, a vision promoted by Virgin Galactic and its billionaire Mr. Branson, And that is space tourism, that with something like $200,000 a pop, if you had that spare cash, you can go into outer space yourself. Well, let's take a short commercial break. Once again, you are listening to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. And give us a call if you want to get on 100 radio stations. The number to call is 612-564-8135, and maybe you can ask your question and get on national radio. So stay tuned as we continue a discussion of outer space.
Dahibo Tea Club's original pure Paudi Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. So it naturally has antifungal, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-infection, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. But maybe more importantly, Dahibo Tea Club's original pure Paudi Arco Super Tea builds corpuscles in the blood which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer happens to die in oxygen. The tea is great for healthy people, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. Dahibo Tea Club's original pure Paudi Arco Super Tea is only $34.95 plus shipping. Order now at shopsupertea.com or call 818-984-6100. That's shopsupertea.com, 818-984-6100. shopsupertea.com.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, veterinarian and naturopathic physician. The Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy with an important message. Take charge of your health. Do not continue to blindly follow the system that has failed us all. I appreciate GCN listeners because you're open-minded and intelligent. If our system is so great, why is it that the United States, the USA, ranks nearly 60th worldwide in longevity and number one in obesity? All the while we spend more money than all the other countries combined annually on unnecessary health care procedures and toxic drugs. It doesn't take much to get on track. Not with the government or pharmaceutical companies, but rather you in control of your own health with a basic understanding of nutrition and supplementation. FDI Longevity has the finest quality health, sports, and energy supplements available. GCN listeners are invited to join our team of people who want to stay healthy well into old age. We are currently looking for specialists to represent FDI Longevity and save America. To buy products at wholesale prices or join our business team, go to GCNteam.com. That's GCNteam.com. Support GCN. Get healthy.
Houseflies defecate every 4 to 5 minutes, spreading diseases and germs. Protect your food and your health with Bug Assault, a miniaturized shotgun which utilizes ordinary table salt as ammunition. Non-toxic, no batteries required, only $39.95. Use discount code GCN and get an extra 10% off your purchase at bugassault.com. Fire your fly swatter. Get your Bug Assault today.
Brought to you by Professor Michio Kaku. This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Once again, with us on the line is Professor Chris Impey, Professor of Astronomy at the University of Arizona in Tucson, author of a number of great books that I highly recommend. One of them is called Beyond, Our Future in Space. And the most recent book is Einstein's Monsters, The Life and Times of Black Holes. Where we last left off, we were talking about billionaires having a vision for outer space. This is so different from the 1960s when it was all beat the Russians, and well, we beat the Russians, and then we took our football and went home. Went home for 50 years. It's been 50 years since we last walked on the moon. And yet we have another billionaire behind Virgin Galactic, and he's pushing space tourism. So how's that coming along? There was a slight mishap that he had recently, but I understand that Mr. Branson is a full blast in putting mom and dad into outer space.
That's right. I mean, there are bumps along the road. Elon Musk has had some rockets blow up, including the precursor to the one that successfully flew recently. Richard Branson had a bad mishap. The prototype of his spaceship, too, was destroyed. The co-pilot was killed. The pilot almost killed. No passengers at that point. And that set him back several years. But, yes, he has a pretty robust model based on tourism, as you said, about $250,000 a pop to go really just for like a 7 or 8 minute zero gravity parabolic arc into the technical definition of space, which is 100 kilometers. And you'd see the curve of the Earth, and it would be black, so I'm sure it would be impressive. That's quite a lot of money per minute, of course. But many people, thousands of people, put down deposits for such an experience.
Okay, well, let's now move on from the space shuttle, which simply spins around the planet Earth, and on to Moon. And 2024 is the tentative projected time when men and women could walk on the Moon. So tell us a little bit about what's happening with the Moon program, and do you think it's going to happen? I mean, things, of course, are always optimistic when they put out the timetable, but what are your thoughts about the Moon mission?
Well, as done by NASA and the U.S. government, it's a little uncertain because we've been here before. George W. Bush had the Moon, Mars, and Beyond initiative, and that never got funded. NASA's subject to the limitations of the federal budget and the election cycle. And ironically, the federal agency is less able to take a long-term view of things than these private sector players who really are looking at the Moon and Mars. So yes, we have a new initiative to go back to the Moon by 2024, but actually it's very unlikely NASA can get there because their own space launch vehicle, the SLS, is way over budget and way behind schedule. So, you know, it may indeed, again, happen by the private sector first.
And I understand that the SLS booster rocket is projected that it would cost $1 billion per launch of the SLS. In other words, it's like a black hole right there on the launch pad, soaking up U.S. taxpayers' dollars. And some people are saying, though, of course, they're pessimistic, some people are saying that it may never fly at all. But what about what is Elon Musk doing? He has the Falcon Heavy. So what is he cooking up?
Well, he has a Falcon Heavy, and as in the press, it was stated that cost per launch is $55 million. So you can compare $55 million to $1 billion, and you can see the price differential. He has a very big rocket with the acronym BFR under development, and that's his beast of a rocket that takes just one of the powerful engines that drives the Falcon 9 and it puts seven of them onto one rocket, and that's designed to take possibly 100 people into Earth orbit and beyond eventually to Mars. So that's his sort of stretch goal, is to sort of scale up his rocket technology to be able to carry 100 people, not just into Earth orbit, but to the Moon. And I think he's not that interested in the Moon. He's really more interested in Mars. But it's a lot easier to get to the Moon. So as a stepping off point and as a way of learning your technologies, how well they work, of setting up colonies, seeing how well they work, probably will go to the Moon first.
Okay, well, I understand there was a minor debate even among NASA officials and even among our astronauts who walked on the Moon. One set of visionaries say, let's go to the Moon and then go to Mars. The others say, well, why bother to stop at the Moon? We've been there. We've done that. Let's just go to Mars directly and bypass the Moon. What are your thoughts? Do you think that's going to affect our projection into the future? What do you think?
I think that Mars is a more exciting goal, but you need to go to the Moon to learn how to do all these technologies at a distance where, you know, you can rescue people within a week, where you're not so very far away. We have to learn how to use lunar soil, as we would use Martian soil to make building materials, to extract oxygen, to breathe, or to combine with hydrogen compounds to make rocket fuel. We need to know how to get water out of the subsurface soil, which we can do on the moon and near the poles or on Mars. So you just learn all these technologies you need to set up a colony on Mars, on the moon, in a sort of safer place. There's also the idea of a space elevator, which would lower the cost of getting to zero gravity from the moon to essentially zero, and we have the technology to build a space elevator on the moon now, but not really on the Earth. We don't have materials strong enough.
Yeah, I understand that the space elevator is sort of like a dream that visionaries and science fiction writers have had, but for the Earth, you need super strong nanotechnology that is not yet ready for prime time, to build this elevator to go into outer space. But you say that perhaps on the moon, with lighter gravity, that the cable wouldn't break, and you could actually build a space elevator on the moon?
That's what I've read. You probably know this, Arthur C. Clarke, who was one of the visionary science fiction writer, of course, who talked about space elevator. He was asked, when would we get one? And he said, 50 years after everyone stops laughing. But actually, people have stopped laughing. So in terms of just materials and engineering, we're very close to being able to do it in the weaker gravity of the moon. And the cost, even NASA's funded studies on the cost of this, it's about $10 billion. Okay, that's a lot of money, but you're going to fuel some large industrial activity and have private sector partners for this. And so it's quite a feasible thing to do.
I understand that in the last century, the Russian visionary Velikovsky was witnessing the building of the Eiffel Tower, and he asked himself a simple question. What happens if the architects didn't stop and just kept on going and built an Eiffel Tower to outer space? At some point, would the centrifugal force of it spinning around the Earth balance the gravity? He did the calculation, and he found that, my God, it's possible that we could have an Eiffel Tower to the stars, basically, held up there by the centrifugal force. But he also calculated that the cable would snap, so it never went anywhere for another 100 years. But who knows, maybe with nanotechnology, we can pretty much carry it off.
Right.
Anyway, let's get back. Yeah?
That's why we love these visionaries, because even if they can't really do what they're dreaming of at the time, they plant the seed, you know, and they make people think about, as technology evolves, we're riding a technological exponential curve, things that were insane or crazy or laughable 100 years ago are now doable.
Now, some people say that we're going to have a traffic jam around the moon and maybe Mars in the coming decades. We have Elon Musk with the Falcon and the Falcon Heavy. We have Jeff Bezos with the Blue Origin series. And we have NASA and Boeing with the SLS booster. And we have the Chinese with the Long March rocket. So some people say that we could have a traffic jam around the moon. So you think that the moon is going to be really hot in the coming decade?
I hope it gets hot. I'd love to see these kind of activities on the moon. And as an astronomer, of course, I note that the moon is an exquisite environment for astronomy, especially radio astronomy. So once you've got a presence on the moon, you can do amazing astronomy there. It's going to get crowded, but I think actually our bigger problems are in near-Earth orbit, where the amount of debris is increasing, and the probability of the catastrophic destruction of a space station or a rocket is significant. So we're always going to be using Earth orbit as a staging point for going beyond, and it's getting kind of jammed up with junk.
Okay, well, let's take another short commercial break. Once again, you are listening to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku, and we have with us Professor Chris Empey of the University of Arizona at Tucson. We're talking about outer space and opening up the heavens for space travel. So let's take a short commercial break and give us a call at 612-564-8135 if you want to get on national radio.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNLive.com today.
USA Radio News with John Hunt.
With the U.S. and the world still not cleared from the coronavirus, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo had this to say to protesters who are in close proximity to one another and still going out to protest.
If you were at a protest, go get a test, please. Wear a mask and tell people that you may have been exposed to COVID. If you were at one of those protests, I would assume that you were infected.
Cuomo spoke after New York City had woken from its third night under curfew, which saw dozens of arrests and clashes between police and protesters. The continued 8 p.m. curfew is aimed at containing violence and looting in the aftermath of Floyd's death. The governor said his officers have every right to enforce the law against those who are violating curfews. He said violence at the protests is down overall, but continues to admonish those who have attacked police as well as looters, saying they will be charged appropriately. This is USA Radio News. Attorney General William Barr defended the decision to forcibly remove protesters from Lafayette Square, downplaying the use of force and claiming that the administration's decision was provoked by increasing violence. Barr claimed the protesters outside the White House were becoming too violent, justifying his authorization for police to remove them. Barr said, "I saw projectiles when I went to Lafayette Park to check out the situation." Reporters and protesters outside the White House said, although some protesters had thrown water bottles and bricks across the barrier separating them from the police, the protests were peaceful. Bernie Madoff lost his bid for early release from prison when the judge who sentenced him to 150 years behind bars said he intended for him to die there and nothing has happened to change his mind. Judge Denny Chin, who now sits on the second U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, noted the continuing suffering of Madoff's thousands of victims who lost $17.5 billion when a decades-long scheme that deceived them into thinking their money was properly invested was exposed in 2008. This is USA Radio News.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
Ouch. The IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
They did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.
I'm here with Scott Jusseum, founder of OMG Tax. Tell us how your company helps our listeners out there who have a problem with the IRS.
My team of lawyers, enrolled agents, and licensed tax experts remove wage garnishments sometimes in the same day. We even have reduced the total debt some of our clients were required to pay through what is known as an offer in compromise.
Can you give us an example of somebody you help?
Oh, can I ever? We have taken a $500,000 liability with the IRS. Guess what? The client didn't pay a dime through the representation known as non-collectible status with the government.
If you owe the IRS more than $10,000 and you want to see if it's possible to pay a lot less, call OMG Tax right now for a free tax-saving consultation.
Call 800-486-8112. 800-486-8112. 800-486-8112. That's 800-486-8112.
Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. And once again, we are talking about the exploration of outer space. Well, with the recent spectacular space shuttle launch, Elon Musk, SpaceX, and NASA are basking in the glory of once again putting humans into outer space. But perhaps the moon is the next goal by 2024, but let's talk about Mars now. It takes 3 days for a rocket to go from the Earth to the moon, 3 days, but it takes 2 years for a round-trip mission to the Red Planet. And some people say, well, it's a whole new ball of wax going to Mars, But Boeing has already plans to build the deep space transport, an ion engine capable of going to Mars. And Elon Musk has the Falcon Heavy, not to mention the BFR and the Starship. And one target is the Red Planet and even beyond. So what are your thoughts? You think that Mars is a reasonable target sometime after 2030? Or if Elon Musk has his way, perhaps just within the next decade? What are your thoughts?
I think it's a reasonable target, and I'm fairly sure it's going to happen. Elon Musk has always been aggressive in his stated timescales, and he hasn't usually met those timescales as he first announced them. But on the other hand, he's always got there eventually, so I think he will in this case too. NASA, of course, has its own plans, and a slightly more cautious approach of sending astronauts just for short periods of time, obviously bringing back samples and Mars rocks back to the Earth, and setting up a moon Mars base would take several decades under NASA's plan. So yeah, Elon Musk is more aggressive in his timescale.
Now, this mission will take about 2 years, and the world's record for a human under weightlessness conditions is little over 1 year, and not to mention the Van Allendaal radiation you have to contend with. So some people are saying that, we still have some homework to do. We have to test the human body under weightlessness for 2 years, and the human body has to have some shielding to protect it against cosmic rays. But what are your thoughts?
Indeed, it is. There are risks. I think the radiation dose you would take on a round trip mission to Mars is five or six times your lifetime radiation dose. Only you just get that during that one trip, so you're taking an increased risk of cancer and cellular damage, and you're going to a place where you'll have to live in a sort of battle hardened habitat to avoid the radiation on Mars. But, you know, the risk, you got to put the risks in perspective, and the risks of the entire trip are substantial, and the kind of people who are going to volunteer for such a mission are risk takers, I assume. A lot of people didn't know, but NASA actually had a sort of semi-secret plan on its shelf for a one-way mission to Mars. By astronauts, you know, for the U.S. government. That was a little embarrassing when that got out, because they don't like to think of taking astronauts and not bringing them back. But that was a way, of course, of keeping the cost down. So there are huge risks in such a mission.
And let's go even further into the future, like the next 100 years. Some people are talking about creating a Garden of Eden on Mars, that is, terraforming Mars. And Elon Musk talked about dropping hydrogen bombs on the polar ice caps to melt the polar ice caps. But who wants to have radioactive drinking water on Mars? Other people say that we should just beam solar energy, solar satellites that can beam energy down to the ice caps and melt them. But what are your thoughts? This is now on a much larger time scale, maybe a century or two. What are your thoughts? Let's take a short commercial break. But after the break, let's talk about one day perhaps creating a Garden of Eden on Mars. Once again, you are listening to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. A special guest today is astronomer Chris Impey, author of the book Einstein's Monsters, The Life and Times of Black Holes.
This is Fred.
Hi, I'm Fred.
Fred's a repeater.
I tend to repeat.
Fred has a business.
I do have a business.
And a problem. Fred repeats the same tired advertising over and over, and now it doesn't work.
Over and over.
But Fred is about to see a vision.
I'm seeing a vision.
Advertising on the Genesis Communications Network is the smart way for Fred to reach his potential customers with the most affordable national advertising rates, period. Get started today with GCN, the Genesis Communications Network. Just email advertise@gcnlive.com.
You know what's really smart?
Wash your hands frequently, practice social distancing, and stay home if told to do so.
You know what's really dumb?
To ignore your immune system.
Right now, more than ever, your health depends on a strong immune system.
The experts at Immunocorp will give you their 7-step guide to immunity for life, free.
Why? Because we want you to be smart and healthy.
simply call 800-446-3063 or click immunityforlife.com.
ImmunoCorp has been producing the world's leading immune system products for more than two decades.
To get your free seven-step guide to immunity for life, call 800-446-3063. 800-446-3063.
Be smart. Don't ignore your immune system. Your life depends on it.
Call 800-446-3063 or click immunityforlife.com. Immunityforlife.com.
Do you feel like many of us?
All the distractions in the world taking our minds and focus off what really needs to get done day to day?
Well, Jeunesse has a dietary supplement called Mind to help with mental distraction, and it supports memory function. Go to GCNLife.com now to check it out. You're only at your best when your mind is at its best. Go to GCNLife.com or call toll-free 844-443-6637. That's GCNLife.com or 844-443-6637.
We have all seen and perhaps used the alcohol-based hand sanitizers. Have you ever noticed how it dries your skin and as soon as the alcohol evaporates, it's no longer effective? With bacteria and virus problems, sanitizers and hand washing are the first line of defense against infectious disease. GCNteam.com has alcohol-free antibacterial soap and foam meeting or exceeding all requirements as set forth by the United States Food and Drug Administration as a first aid antiseptic. When it comes to sanitizers, it only makes sense that it lasts till the next application and doesn't dry and crack your skin, inviting infection. For long-lasting alcohol-free sanitizing, come to GCNteam.com keyword antibacterial. That's GCNteam.com, antibacterial, or call 877-878-4203. 877-878-4203.
Brought to you by Professor Michio Kaku. This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. In this hour, we have with us astronomer Chris Empey, author of a number of great books in astronomy. One of them is called Beyond, Our Future in Space. Another is Einstein's Monsters, The Life and Times of Black Holes. And he's a professor of astronomy at the University of Arizona in Tucson. Well, let's talk about Mars and the potential of one day turning Mars into an Earth-like paradise. Of course, this is science fiction, but that hasn't stopped visionaries from thinking about what it would take to one day turn Mars into a mini planet Earth. And Elon Musk always talks about a multi-planet species. That is, why put all of humanity on one planet? Why not disperse humanity to other planets? Because, well, the dinosaurs did not have a space program. And that's why they're not here today to talk about it. We do have a space program, and we can talk about possible alternative futures. So what are your thoughts about a long-term goal of terraforming Mars?
Well, it certainly makes sense, given what's happening on the Earth, to spread our bets a bit. And so Mars is the nearest place we could potentially render habitable. And so, it's a fantastically ambitious project, but there's no showstoppers, you know, breaking any laws of physics to do it. It's just a huge technology project, essentially in multiple stages, taking, as you said, centuries. You'd have to deposit enough energy into Mars soil. You'd have to essentially melt enough water and release enough carbon dioxide to set up a greenhouse effect, hopefully make it run away. And that would raise the temperature and thicken the atmosphere enough to have liquid water on the surface. And then you could start to seed microbes that would put oxygen into the atmosphere and then eventually make it breathable by humans. It's grandiose and extremely difficult, but again, there are no fundamental obstacles. It is a big planet, so doing it to the whole planet will take a long time and a lot of money and a lot of energy to get there.
Now, I saw one estimate that said that if you could raise the temperature of Mars by just 6 degrees, that's it, just 6 degrees for the entire planet, the greenhouse effect, it will become autocatalytic. It'll take off all by itself. because the more ice you melt, the more water vapor you have. Water vapor in turn is a greenhouse gas, and you get a vicious cycle that just takes off and melts the polar ice caps. But, well, hey, that's way in the future, but what are your thoughts about the fact that at some point you could get a runaway greenhouse effect?
Yeah, and in fact, you've hit the thing that makes it viable at all. If you had to do it in a slow, linear way, it's just too much work. It's too much time to get the temperature up. But, you know, just as we know to our discomfort on the Earth, where we may be reaching a tipping point with our climate, you can deliberately engineer a tipping point for Mars into the runaway greenhouse effect that will, you know, take you the rest of the way towards liquid bodies of water on Mars, which we know existed on Mars 3 billion years ago. So Mars was a watery world with a thicker atmosphere in the past. So we'd just be returning Mars to its former glory and then adding some oxygen so we could live there.
Now, we were talking about billionaires a second ago. Another set of billionaires is behind Google, and they've set their sights on mining the asteroid belt because there's platinum-based minerals on the asteroids that would literally pay for itself if you could bring one of them back down to the planet Earth. So what are your thoughts, and again, this is way in the future, of having a self-sustaining space program paid for by asteroids that we lasso from outer space? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's also ambitious, but actually not as long time scale or outrageous as terraforming Mars. I think that actually can happen in a couple of decades, maybe less. As far as I can tell, there are about a dozen private entities, organizations, companies that are looking at mining asteroids or space resources. So basically the trick is to find a near-Earth, not go all the way to the asteroid belt, but find a near-Earth asteroid and put rockets on it. We know how to land on comets, and, you know, that's a simple technology, and steer the asteroid into an Earth-Moon captured orbit and then gradually circularize it into an Earth orbit. And then you just mine it at your leisure. And as you say, you know, there's about 2 trillion of a sort of 500-meter asteroid, a lot of trillions of dollars worth of precious metal.
Okay, let's take another short commercial break. Once again, you are listening to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Give us a call at 612-564-8135. And we are talking about outer space. Is our destiny to be a multi-planet species? So stay tuned as we continue the discussion with astronomer Chris Impey.
Attention homeowners that have ever had a broken appliance.
That's a joke, right? We've all had broken appliances. I own a home just like you, and have found a way for as little as a dollar a day to have all the major appliances in my home on a warranty plan. They're guaranteed to be fixed or replaced. You know how expensive an air conditioner, the heating system, a washing machine, dryer, water heater, or refrigerator can be. For about a dollar a day, all your major appliances are protected in case they break. Unless you're Daddy Warbucks or the Monopoly guy and you don't care about money, call my friends at the Home Service Club now and get a warranty on your major appliances. It's a free call, and the first month is free. But be one of the first 25 people to call within the next 10 minutes.
800-825-6796. 800-825-6796. 800-825-6796. Again, that's 800-825-6796.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
Thank you.
These are the sounds of someone taking their eyes off the road. Texting while driving is more than distracting. It's dangerous. Do yourself a favor. Do us all a favor. When you're on the road, stay off the phone. A message from CTIA.
Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but soon you'll need a plan and place to survive. Forget bunkers. You're not a live underground gopher. You need survivalist camps, the ultimate fully functional off-the-grid mobile survival bug out house that's well equipped and custom built to outlast any other RV or trailer. Bold statement, you bet. See them now at survivalistcamps.com. That's survivalistcamps.com. Trust your family's survival to survivalistcamps.com.
This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Once again, with us on the line is astronomer Chris Empey. He's a professor of astronomy at the University of Arizona in Tucson, author of a number of great books that I recommend, including Beyond, Our Future in Space, and Einstein's Monsters, The Life and Times of Black Holes. And today we're talking about the exploration of the universe. Well, we talked about Mars, we talked about lassoing asteroids, but some people are even more ambitious and would like to go even beyond Mars because, well, so far we have no signs of life on Mars, but on Europa, a moon of Jupiter, we think there's a liquid water ocean underneath the ice cover. That's incredible. Think about that. Perhaps aquatic fish or aquatic life forms that live under the ice cover way out there circulating around Jupiter. So what are your thoughts about the fact that Europa, Enceladus, and some of the moons of the gas giants may actually harbor life while Mars may not? But what are your thoughts?
That's right. It's ironic that, I mean, we think of Mars as the place to go to look for evidence of life, but there's possibly a dozen moons in the outer solar system where there's liquid water under an icy, rocky crust. And so wherever there's liquid water and carbon-based material and available energy, there could be microbes, and they're mostly very far away. Europa is a great place to try and investigate because it's not as far away as those outer moons. NASA has, you know, NASA and the Europeans have the Europa Clipper mission, which is, well, it's a little timid. There was initially a thought of a lander and something that might drill down into the ice or even melt through the ice and release a submersible to explore the oceans. That's not in view right now. But by the mid-1930s, it looks like we'll be investigating Europa and the potential it has for life.
And speaking about life in outer space, of course, we've had a number of people on Science Fantastic from the SETI program trying to intercept eavesdrop on messages from alien civilizations. I understand that you're part of the METI project, which is different in the sense that you actually want to signal alien civilizations in outer space by sending a message. So what are your thoughts about SETI versus METI?
Right. METI is, it has received some, you know, blowback or negative press, if you like, because some people say, well, we don't really know what the aliens, if they exist, the intelligent aliens' intention is, so why would we betray our presence to them because they might be malign? I mean, that involves various assumptions. The whole field involves assumptions. So I think it's just a different strategy than the passive listening strategy to sort of think about how we would choose to present ourselves to, you know, aliens of unknown function and form far away. It's obviously a very speculative project. In a way, it's like looking in a mirror. It's deciding how you want to present yourself to the rest of the universe.
Well, Stephen Hawking, a colleague of mine, the late Stephen Hawking, said that when Cortez met the Aztecs hundreds of years ago in Mexico, it did not turn out well for the Aztecs. Their whole civilization collapsed within a matter of months because Cortez had the horse, he had gunpowder, he had steel, and he had smallpox. And what did the Aztecs have to counter all these things? So what do you say to people who say that, well, these aliens out there, They could be like Cortez, and we could be the Aztecs if you signal them and announce our existence to them. But what are your thoughts?
I agree. It's a possibility, and I don't know if that's enough reason not to do the activity, because almost all these ideas involve some anthropocentric thinking of the making analogies with us and colonization of the world, which indeed did lead to bad outcomes for the natives who are in these other parts of the world. But the likelihood that the aliens share our cultural values or our violent tendencies or our tribal nature, you know, that's a low probability. We don't know the probability. So it's making assumptions of any kind that's tricky in this field, because they don't have to be maligned. They might actually be able to share knowledge with us. That's in another entirely plausible scenario.
And we've had a number of astronomers on the show, and I always ask them, when you see pictures of flying saucers, and now we have government videos of strange objects flying at hypersonic velocities, what are your thoughts? I mean, you're an astronomer, you peer into the heavens, you go light years, hundreds of light years into outer space, but what about in our own backyard when you see these funny things dancing on radar screens? What are your thoughts?
Well, it's ironic because astronomers have, through the Kepler spacecraft and hunting for exoplanets, have pretty much concluded that across the Milky Way there are tens of billions of habitable worlds out there. So it's not ridiculous to imagine that on some of them there are intelligent civilizations that have traveled through space. So that the premise is certainly supported by science, but the fact of them having visited is a different matter entirely. And so, I mean, I usually fall back on Carl Sagan's extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence, and the evidence that is usually put around on the internet or little video clips or images or even eyewitness accounts is just not strong enough to make such a really amazing claim.
And some of these videos, well, who knows what they really are, but one possibility is that they are hypersonic drones being tested by the Chinese, the Russians, and the United States. We're entering a whole new class of aircraft in outer space in the atmosphere, traveling at hypersonic velocities. Now, you mentioned extrasolar planets. I understand that we've identified 4,000. Oh, unfortunately, our time is up. So, Chris, thank you so much for being on Science Fantastic.
It was a pleasure. Good to be with you, Michio.
And once again, his books include Beyond Our Future in Space and Einstein's Monsters, The Life and Times of Black Holes. And he is a professor of astronomy at the University of Arizona in Tucson. And you've been listening to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. You can always give us a call at 612-564-8135. Leave your name, call letters to the radio station, and the city you're calling from, and bingo, maybe you can get on 100 radio stations that carry Science Fantastic.
Advertising is simple. It starts with someone who has a need.
Mom!
And then gets more specific.
Mom, I want pizza.
Then we add urgency.
I want pizza tonight.
Before you know it, your GCN advertising message is reaching millions of listeners. Listeners who are definitely in need.
We want pizza!
You see, advertising on GCN is simple. Your message meets their need, and the result means new business for you. Tell us about your business, then let our super creative department go to work to craft just the right message to feed those who have an urgent need.
We want pizza tonight!
GCN has the most affordable national radio advertising rates, period. And millions of people listen to GCN radio programs on over 1,000 AM and FM and XM stations and streaming audio live. Get started today with GCN, the Genesis Communications Network. Just shoot us an email, advertise@gcnlive.com. Thank you.